Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, Text 34. Evam Rinam Kriya Yoga.
Evam Rinam Kriya Yoga.
Sarve Samsukti Hetava.
Sarve Samsukti Hetava.
Daye Vatma Vinasaya.
Daye Vatma Vinasaya.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Kalpante Kalpita Pare.
Evam.
Thus,
Nenam, of the human being,
Kriya Yoga,
of all activities,
Sarve,
everything,
Sansiti,
material existence,
Yitavala,
causes,
Ti,
that.
Eva,
certainly,
Atma,
the tree of work,
Vinasaya,
killing,
Kalpante,
become competent,
Kalpitaha,
dedicated,
Pare,
unto the transcendence.
Thus, when all a man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord,
those very activities which cause his perpetual bondage become the destroyer of the tree of work.
Purport.
Fruit of activities which have perpetually engaged the living being is compared to the banyan tree in the Bhagavad Gita, for it's certainly very deeply rooted. As long as the propensity for enjoying the fruit of work is there, one has to continue the transmigration of the soul from one body or place to another, according to one's nature of work. The propensity for enjoyment may be turned into the desire for serving the mission of the Lord. By doing so, one's activity is changed into karma yoga, or the way by which one can attain spiritual perfection while engaging in the work for which he has a natural tendency. Here the word Atma indicates the categories of all fruitive work. The conclusion is that when the result of all fruitive and other work is dovetailed with the service of the Lord, it will cease to generate further karma and will gradually develop into transcendental devotional service, which will not only cut off completely the root of the banyan tree of work, but will also carry the performer to the lotus feet of the Lord. The summary is that one has to first of all seek the association of pure devotees who are not only learned in the Vedanta but are self-realized souls and unlike devotees of Lord Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. In that association, the neophyte devotees must render loving service physically and mentally without reservation. This service attitude will induce the great souls to be more favorable in bestowing their mercy, which injects the neophyte with all the transcendental qualities of the pure devotees. Gradually, this is developed into a strong attachment to hearing the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, which makes them able to catch up the constitutional position of the gross and subtle bodies, and beyond them the knowledge of pure soul and his eternal relation with the Supreme Soul, the personality of Godhead. After the relation is ascertained by establishment of the eternal relation, pure devotional service to the Lord begins gradually developing into perfect knowledge of the personality of Godhead beyond the purview of impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. By such Purushottam Yoga, as it is stated in Bhagavad Gita, one is made perfect even during the present corporal existence, and one exhibits all the good qualities of the Lord to the highest percentage. Such is the gradual development by association of pure devotees. The tree of work, the banyan tree, that is described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It is said that urdhamulam adasakam, that this tree has its
roots upwards and the branches downwards. Because it has its roots in the spiritual world. It has its branches in the material world, but its roots, the roots of the living being, are in the spiritual world. So the tree is a reflection, because where else do you find a tree with the roots up and the branches down? But when you're looking at the reflection of a tree, yes, then the branches are down and the roots are up. Therefore, material existence is the reflection of the activities in the spiritual world. Because by nature, the soul is eternally active. And because the soul is eternally active, therefore in the spiritual world there is activity and endless variety. And the living beings in the spiritual world are always doing things. It's not like, now I've attained perfection, now after this life I attain the eternal world and I never have to work again. I never have to work again because I got everything. Everything I desire is just there, without work. It appears that in the spiritual world, maybe it is like that, because there are desire trees that can fulfill any desire and give everything you want without work. Oh, work, work, work. The tree of work. The world of work. Always working, working, working like slaves from Monday to Friday. Gotta work. Early in the morning, leave home. Come back late at night. Work. That hard work. Nothing is achieved without work. Sweat. Sweat. Yes, is the situation in the material world. Such hard work, hard labor. We discussed the other day, Parishram, hard labor, in the same way. Christian tradition also, say, like, I don't know the English for it, you know, in Zweit über Anscheins, in the sweat of your appearance, I guess. I mean, it must be a better way of saying perspiration of your appearance, something like that. Although sweat is more graphic of what it really is. It's by hard labor, and we live like that. And then, well, you know, we get attached to that labor. And so much energy I'm putting into this. So I want some returns from it. You know, saying, gosh, for everything I'm doing, I want some returns from it. What do you think, you know? All that labor and nothing, I get nothing for it. Therefore, we get attached to the fruits of our labor. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gives that story about the man going up the foothills of the mountain. So it's not so steep yet, but it's going up. And it's tiring. It's tiring when the path goes up. You lose your breath. So he was thinking, boy, I'm sweating. I'm sweating like a horse, you know, going up the street. He said, a horse. If only I would have a horse, that would make life a lot easier. Then he just saw nearby in a field a horse. He said, whoa. Just as I'm thinking about a horse, there is a horse. It's the arrangement of the Lord. Said, I've got to have this horse. He found the owner of the horse who lived in a small cottage nearby and negotiated a price. First he didn't want to sell, but money talks. And then, yeah, well, you know, I mean, this horse is a very, very good horse. And it goes for a very, very, very good price. Anyway, he paid the price because it was a divine horse after all. So he went along with his horse. He tried to go on the way, but the horse didn't move. He looked everywhere for the handbrake or any trick to make it move. You know, pulled the tail, you know, beat the horse, nothing happened, didn't move. He's thinking, my God, what am I gonna do? You know, this horse is not moving. Then from the horse fell a little foal. Just like that, he's going, yes, see. My lucky day, two for the price of one. Yeah? Yeah? not bad at all. But then that little foal was too small to walk, and therefore the mother refused to walk. So still not moving. So, you know, I can't wait for that horse to grow up, you know what I mean? I gotta go. So he decided, he took the little foal on the shoulders and was walking. He's walking up the mountain carrying that foal, and the horse was nicely walking behind him. So one man saw him and said, "What in the world are you doing? What are you doing?" He said, "Well, you know, carrying this foal up the mountain." He said, "Why would you do such a thing?" I said, "Well, you know, there is a story. Yeah, there is a story." And he told the whole story, you know what I mean? Horse, divine horse, paid good price, and this and that. And then foal came out, you know, and that's an event, you know, it's like not moving. It's like, he said, the man said, "But why? Why don't you just leave your horses behind?" He said, "Oh no, oh no, oh no, I can't do that. I paid a lot of money for those horses." So this shows we've invested so much in so many things. You know, for years, I mean, I worked for years for this, really. You know, I can't leave. But, you know, everything goes wrong in this place. When Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan were harassed by too many demons, they just left. They just left that place. And they moved to another place. But this is the place, you know, where you've lived all these years. This is the place where you have your home, you know, being your home, where you know everything, you know what I mean? You're familiar to this place, you know what I'm saying? You grew up here, you know it, everything about it, you know what I'm saying? Your favorite trees are in the garden, you know when they blossom, you know when the fruits are coming, you know where the comfy branches are. You know, how many times did you climb in that tree when you were a kid? Remember, all your memories are here in this tree. It's a tree full of memories. You cannot leave this tree. So this is the nature of how we get entangled in work. It's all the things we've done, you know. Things become valuable because we have associated with them. A tree. I saw in Vrindavan there was a sadhu, he was living under a tree for a long time. So in the end, he had like a kurta hanging on a cloth hanger on one of the branches of the tree. And that was not exactly the way the six Goswamis were staying under the trees. Because the six Goswamis would stay under a different tree every night and just move around and would not go like, you know, this is a very comfortable tree because you can really hang your cloth hangers very nicely off this branch. Then the tree becomes like a house. And then a house is the product of all our work. Right? All our treasures are in this house. I mean, that's how it is. It's like in Amsterdam, we have this festival, now it's called the King's Day every year. And besides that, it's a big kirtan party, which there's also a junk market. Yeah? Lots of people, they just sell junk on the street, and it's just an open flea market. You sell junk, and it's, you look around, and it's junk. Right? It's just real junk, right? And it's coming out on the street, you know, on that day, and people buy it. I mean, people buy it. It's total junk, but they buy it. And then, I guess, they can't do anything with it, and it comes out the next year on the street again, you know, like, and that's what they buy it for, so they have something to put on the street next year when it's the junk market. It's basically junk. But it doesn't really stand out in the house, which is full of junk anyway. If you look, so many things are in there. So now that you never know, you know, it may come in handy.
I mean, don't we have one of those things? You know, and the glory moment comes when after 27 years, finally you say, well, you need something. You need like a specific thing to scratch the inside of the ear, right? I think, well, don't we have one, you know? Like, no, really, I think we got one of those things, actually, somewhere. Digging through boxes, digging through trunks and old suitcases, and lo and behold, there it is, after 27 years, glory, glory. I knew it, I knew it, I knew it. Victory, I knew it when I saved this, that one day it would come in handy. And in this way, we work and work and work and collecting. Oh yes, collecting so many things and all these things. No, no. But I have that. Yes, I have.
We also have. We have everything. Everything we have. Yes.
So in this way, and we think that all these things are making our life more comfortable. It's like in travel, it's also like that. I have a suitcase, and there are many things in these suitcases that never come out of the suitcase. You never, because you never really fully unpack the suitcase. Yeah. So it stays in, and then just a few things to take out, put it back in, zip the things back up, and carry that suitcase to the next destination. Yeah. It's the same things, they never come out. Yeah. And after a while it dawns upon me, maybe I should throw this out, you know what I mean? I never use it anyway. Yeah. So like this, life is a big suitcase. A very big suitcase. The suitcase called life. And in that suitcase, so many things we're carrying with us. So many things. That is the situation. So, what to say? When we take to Krishna consciousness, then our objectives change. Then our aim becomes to go back to Godhead, to live in the eternal spiritual world, where Krishna is all that matters, right? And everyone, and whatever we use, just use it for Krishna's service, and nothing else in the spiritual world. Otherwise, no interest in anything. It's just like the other day, I was reading something how in the eternal relationship, the acharyas described that there's a category of things which are apparently enjoyed by the residents of Vrindavan separate from Krishna, apparently. Like, for example, some sweetness, you know, from the fragrance of the flowers. Such a wonderful place. It's not that they stuff up their nostrils, that we are only interested in Krishna. So we don't smell anything until Krishna comes, and then we pull the cotton wool out of our nose. Krishna's lotus feet, tulasi leaves on Krishna's lotus feet. Then, as soon as we're no longer with Krishna, stuff up your nose again, stuff up your ears, stuff up all your sensual perceptions. No, no, not like that. Appreciating also the smells in the spiritual world, but seeing them in relationship with Krishna. It is the impersonalist who is stuffing up the noses, blocking out the senses, so that nothing to do with immaterial energy, nothing to do with Krishna's energies. But the devotee is appreciating
that everything in the material world is, when there's beauty in the material world, that that beauty is the smiling face of Krishna. It's Krishna's smile. It's like that. Anything that is nice, it's all related to Krishna. And then we see beauty in the world. We basically see Krishna. Oh, Krishna's inviting me with this beauty. Yes, you like beauty, isn't it? Krishna is saying. Actually, I do. Yes, I do. Yes. No, I like it. Things that are very beautiful, I like. Ugly things, not so much. You know what I mean? So that's why I don't like in the mirror. Don't like to look in the mirror so much. Beautiful things I like. Yes. So that potential is within us, that natural propensity to like beauty. But why go for second class? Why would you settle for second class, or third class, or even fourth or fifth, low class? Why would you settle for the best? Why would you settle for any less than the best? Then, Krishna is the best when it comes to beauty. Nothing is more beautiful than Krishna. Krishna even beautifies the jewels that he wears. So it is described. So in this way, we are not giving up our propensities, but all to enjoy, that is there, but all connected to Krishna, all seeing things connected to Krishna. So what is apparently separate from Krishna is still not separate from Krishna, because the devotees see it only in connection with Krishna. This particular purport is dealing with the devotee who is neophyte and who first, and when it comes to the tree of work, it's just very hard to disentangle. It's very hard all that to just detach from all that work in the material world, because all the memories are there. Therefore, it is said, no problem, just use it. Use the material energy in the service of Krishna. And then, eventually, Krishna becomes more important than that object. So, like, for example, we may like music. So in the beginning, we make music, and it's all about the music. But, of course, it's the holy name. And chant with the holy name. And eventually the holy name becomes more important than the music. One becomes more attached to the holy name than to the music. In the beginning, the music is maybe more important than the holy name. It's the music that we actually like, not so much the holy name. But gradually, the holy name becomes like, takes over. That's the nature of Krishna. So anything that we connect to Krishna in Karma Yoga, where we have a particular liking for a particular activity, if we connect that activity with Krishna, then eventually we'll get more attached to Krishna than to that thing. And in that way, our Karma Yoga turns into pure bhakti. Gradually, our personal desire disappears. And that's a very natural way to become elevated. Rather, not like I'm going to the forest and leave everything behind. Well, forests, you know. Yeah, forests. In the day it's one thing, at night it's another thing. What was that? All kinds of noises. Jackals. Jackals don't bite people. Are you sure? There's about 20 of them around us. No, they only attack people when they're dead. Are you sure?
or do they attack people that are alone in the forest at night? Ooh, it looks different at night. Everything looks different at night. So it's not so simple to just say, move into the forest, give up the world. Not required. Not required. One will simply use the thing, just give up the sinful things of the world. And for the rest, use everything in the service of Krishna. Oh, the clock is gone. And then, disappear. Oh, no, it's not. Thought it was there. Yeah, then we are becoming automatically purified. So that is the secret of Krishna consciousness. And that secret is not commonly known. That is very brilliant. That is Yukta Vairagya. And that is a very brilliant principle. See, we don't find that. In India, we find a big problem that people, they come from a village. A lot of people come from a village. Still, the majority of people live in the villages, although more and more are coming into the cities. But the majority of the people live in the villages, and then they come to, for education, they come to the city. And then, you know, you can't go back to your village. And village, they learned a simple devotional spiritual life. But then when they get involved in education, then they get involved with the world, and then it feels like one leg in one world, one leg in another world. Now, how can I go back to that simple village life? And they identify spiritual life with the simple village life of being renounced and very simple. They know, just use the things of the world for Krishna. That is Yukta Vairagya. So that is one of our trump cards, so to speak. This is one of our main points in dealing with the world, in dealing with people of the world. The point that no problem, no problem at all. Spiritual life, it's not about becoming otherworldly. I have this video clip of this Zen monk in Tokyo. And he just, it's Tokyo, it's like one of those cities, like just so full of people. It's like so busy, and then all these high-rise buildings, neon lights, etc. And right in the heart of the city, he's walking there with one of those lampshade hats, you know what I mean? He's got a lampshade hat on, and he's walking very slowly. Put his foot down very slowly, and he rings a bell every 10 seconds, and he must be counting 2, 3, ding, and then the other foot goes down. Ding! Again. You know, and he walks right through the center of Tokyo. And it's just such a picture, it's such a contrast. Right? I mean, how is it possible? How can he live like that? How can he be so otherworldly? It's not possible. How can he be so oblivious to what's around him? Glitter, glitter, glitter shops. Oh yes, beautiful little office girls, they're beautiful, they got money as well. Just walking around. It's all there. Nice, nice. Ding! He doesn't even look from under his lampshade head. You know what I mean? He doesn't peep nothing. No.
totally oblivious to the world. How can it be done? Is that possible? Can anyone be like that? Is that spiritual life? Come on, you know what I mean? Give us a break. It's hard to be so otherworldly, to turn away from the world. Yeah? Yes, it is hard. That is difficult to maintain. Therefore, no problem. Take the things of the world. Use them. Use them in the service of Krishna. Of course, you know, then there comes a point where you get to the point where you feel it's hard to use the things of the world in the service of Krishna. In the beginning, it's, oh yes, I want to use the things of the world in the service of Krishna. Yes, I will use the things of the world in the service of Krishna. Like that. Yeah. But that's not how the song ends. The song ends of, oh my God, do I really have to use all these things in the service of Krishna? I mean, you know, Canada is certainly the most simple way. Because the material world is complex, actually. The material energy is difficult. It's difficult. It's unpredictable. You never know. You don't know how it's going to turn out. I hope everything will work out, you know what I mean? Prayers, may nothing go wrong. Yes, because you never know. How are you today?
Doing good today.
You're doing good today, okay, that's good to know. I have to check, you know, I mean, every sort of half an hour to how he's doing, because subject to change. You never know. You just don't know. Anything can change, anyone. Material energy. So at one point one comes to the point, why bother engaging all this material energy? Actually, one can also worship Krishna in a simple way. And that's actually very nice. Yes, live under a tree, said Rupa and Sanatana. Simply live under a tree. No more problems. Who's going to clean the house? Yeah. He got this huge house. Oh my God, who's going to clean it? Yeah. Well, why would you clean it? Maybe. I've seen houses where the spider webs are just actually taking over. But then the ghosts move in. So, the material world, we have to work. We can't avoid it. Therefore, even in Yukta Vairagya, we may minimize our involvement with the material energy other than for the service of Krishna. For Krishna, yes, we use everything. For ourselves, as little as possible. It's just a pain, you know what I mean? It's just a pain. It's like having a car, right? Think, hey, hoo, hoo, ka, zoom, zoom, you know. But a car, you pay before you drive, you pay while you drive, and you pay after you drive. Right? And so on the train, you just, okay, you pay once or you don't pay at all, that depends on you. But whatever it may be. Yeah. It's basically, once you have things, you have to pay. And that's the nature of things. You have to pay. Pay either with money, pay with energy, but pay with a piece of your life. You know what I'm saying? For everything you're going to have, you pay with a piece of your life. Everything you choose, you have to pay with a piece of your life. That's what it is. And that's intense. Think about it. I'm paying. If it's just money, yeah, I'll pay. No. That money to get it takes a piece of your life. Therefore, you're paying with a piece of your life. Anything. Are you ready for that?
Life is only so big. One piece going. You know,
pay with that to get something.
Life is only so big.
Pay with a piece of your life. And in the end, oh my God.
And we're dreaming, I'm going to do all these things for Krishna, but actually if you look at it, I've already cut so many pieces off for other things. How much is left for Krishna? How much is left? I've already committed. Signed the contract with blood.
Dip the pen.
Ah, yes. Sign the name.
Yes, okay, I work for this boss, I accept this job. Yes. I have an education for it. Pieces of our life, and we are paying pieces of our life. All right, after this very nice kind of like light lecture, which is very sweet and inspiring, just before breakfast, I'll end now on a light note. Any questions? No, not really, but going back under the blankets. Very important. One nourishes the other. Without reading, because we're conditioned, we may not appreciate the japa as much. Without japa, we will not understand the depth of the reading. So they nourish.
Krishna's time of death, near that time, his children are behaving very like rascals and they're causing a lot of trouble.
Uh-huh.
Apparently him and Balaram both kind of reached the point where they felt like him.
The Mausalya Leela. Dreaded topic. Krishna. Well, you know, basically Krishna's relatives, the Yadus, they were very powerful. Krishna had so many sons, and it's described that from each of his queens he had 10 sons times 16,108, means a serious number which maybe he can tell you any moment because he's good at numbers. See? The thing is that it's a very large number. So the Yadus were a force to reckon with. And because they were Krishna's relatives, they were invested with the power of Krishna. And of course, not all 161 are described. You know, but some of the principal sons are described in the Bhagavatam. Prajumna is described as he looked so much like Krishna. He's just, and he was so powerful, you know, practically the most powerful of all Krishna's sons. But so many were very powerful. Aniruddha was very powerful. It's like a powerful fighter. So this army of the Yadus is too powerful. So that's why Krishna arranged it that before his departure, the Yadus would also leave the planet. And one time they drank some rice wine, and when they were drunk, they fought with each other, and things went wrong, and that was the end of the yadu dynasty. Story goes in a lot of detail, but this is the gist of it. You can read it in the 11th canto.
Can you tell just a little bit more about working for the pleasure of Krishna? Because yesterday I had a conversation with Jose sitting over there, and like you said, when you get a job, you have an agreement, and then cut your life. You know, you mentioned that as an example of cutting your life. But on the other hand, you can do your work.
Still, you cut a piece of your life.
Oh yes, or even.
But you can offer that to Krishna.
Aha, that's it.
That you can do.
Yeah. Okay.
You can offer to Krishna, but you cut a piece of your life in that job.
Yeah.
Then you can try and offer the fruits of your job to Krishna as much as you can. As much as you can.
Yes.
As much as your mind allows you, because your mind is thinking. I would also like to see the new Star Wars movie. Your mind might think, even Obama went to see it. So, you know, it's like, you think, well, you know, can't be fanatic. And there goes a little piece of your life. A little piece of your life went to Star Wars. Which is a stupid movie anyway. That's obvious. I mean, you know, you don't have to see it to understand that. It's like... And... it's just decorated war. Yeah. Same old thing, you know. Killing. So, but then decorate it, like with some funny-looking spaceships and things, and some laser beams and this and that. But it's just about people killing each other. Great. Let's pay for that with a piece of our life. I just established that we're paying for everything with a piece of our life. So there's so much distraction in the world. So much. It's even if we are initiated, it doesn't mean that it's just so easy to give all, everything to Krishna. It's always so much for Krishna, so much for me. You know? That's the problem. And we dream of all the things we can do. Like, you know, we dream of, like, when we're young, we're dreaming of everything I can become. Yeah, but each choice you make limits you. With each choice you make, you cannot be something else. That's it. Whom shall I marry? It's not only about the one you marry, it's also about the others that you're not going to marry by marrying that one. You think of it that way. Limiting. So it's just a small thing, a life, and each time, boom, cut a piece off. And that piece goes somewhere. When you offer it the results to Krishna, yes, then that piece goes to Krishna. So you can work in a job and offer it to Krishna. That means the money you get from that job, you got to use for Krishna. Of course, Does it mean you have to give everything to the temple then and you starve for the rest of the month? No. It means that also you maintain yourself, but then you have to live for Krishna. If you speak that soft, then you know, you really can't.
Is there any yukta vairagya in the mode of passion, ignorance, or goodness?
Is there any yukta vairagya in the mode of passion? Yukta vairagya in the mode of passion becomes corrupted yukta vairagya. The mode of passion is not about, man, it's not about the way you move, you know. You think I'm passionate or something? No. That can be engaged in the service of Krishna. But it's about the enjoying propensity. The mode of passion is about enjoying the mode of passion. So yukta vairagya. So in the name of yukta vairagya, I'm enjoying my senses. In the name of Krishna, I'm enjoying all these things. So there's a catch. So at Yukta Vairagya, there is a risk. There is a danger. There's a danger that in the name of using it for Krishna, you actually start to use it all for yourself. That's why we said it's good in private life to keep things simple. And only for service. It's the tortoise. Keep the legs in the house and only put them out when for service. So private life, life is simple. Service, everything is possible. Yeah, so yukta vairagya, renunciation and using things for Krishna. Not for us, but for us to get entangled in work again. Maintaining attachments. Tens of ends against the holy names to maintain material attachments. These guys are receiving so many instructions on this subject matter. Now, how about that? You know what I mean? So many instructions on this subject matter and still maintaining material attachments. What is that? It means that we nourish these material desires. We feed them like a pet. You can see these dogs, you know, that are overfed. They walk on the line, you know, it's like a huge big, a roll, you know, a huge big round body with some legs, overly fed pet. So when your material desires become like fat pets, then you're in trouble. So we should not nourish these material desires. And if you always wanted like a fancy car, then should we now have a fancy car for Krishna? Maybe not. So we can be a little careful when we recognize this fruitive tendency and ask, okay, you know. It's like the mind wants the new form, you know what I mean? Not the one from last year, no. The new one. Need it for service. Service. Krishna service, bro. You will be able to serve Krishna better and more efficiently. To balance it. That's where passion comes. Yes.
So, a few days ago, we heard the lecture. Charananda Prabhu. A few days ago, we heard a lecture of Charananda Prabhu, in which we learned that if we are doing service for Krishna, we have to look at what our, maybe I'm saying it completely wrong, so please interrupt me if I am, but it was about doing service in according to your nature, and also doing service that you enjoy for Krishna. So now that we hear this, it seems like there is a fine line between doing these things that you like for Krishna and maybe going to your nature, and then also what you just told us about how the Vairagya can become corrupted. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on that? How we can maybe overcome that?
Yeah, well, you know, the sometimes there's the opposite philosophy. That service that you hate the most is the one where you make the most advancement. Therefore, everyone should do what they hate the most. And then it'll become really advanced really quick. So, you know what I mean? That service that hurts you, you know, that is really painful. I mean, that's the one where you get really purified, you know. So sometimes there's that philosophy. But with that philosophy, we're going to put, like, someone who hates cooking, probably has a reason for hating cooking, namely, they can't cook. If you can cook, and everybody goes like, oh, it tastes like nectar, then you like cooking, right? But if whatever you cook is horrible, right, then you don't like cooking so much. So it's natural that, you know, the things that we're good at, we like them. Yeah, we like them. I like, you know, things that I'm good at. I don't like things I'm not good at. Yeah. So our propensities are there, and even in pure devotional service, it is natural that one uses his capacity and ability in the service of Krishna. Therefore, it's not that we should do only those things that are contradictory to our nature, just to make sure there's no fruitive intent. We don't have to be so afraid. Because, like I said earlier on, the yukta vairagya, the service of Krishna will purify us. When Krishna is connected to it, it will purify us. Even at home, right? Okay, so I say, like, I have this house with 27 rooms, you know, like, but in every room there's a picture of Krishna. So, okay, that's very good. Of course, you know, to have a house with 27 rooms could be called a material attachment, possibly so. Because do you really need them? No. It's like, not really. Like, my father was into a big house, and the house was a big thing for him. Anybody? So we had a fancy doorbell, it started there. And the doorbell did a whole symphony, you know. So as soon as you rang the doorbell, you got this whole musical symphony, and then you would come in, and then, oh, well, come, yes, you know what I mean, please come, do come in, you know. And then after a while, the visitor would get a tour of the house, and then here was the wall with the Italian marble bricks, you know, and there's the antique mirror, and this and that, and we get the full tour. It's like a museum, you know, the whole thing. So, you know, develop attachment to your house that way. Yeah, if you turn your house into a museum. Now you can quickly to whitewash the whole thing, put some few pictures of Krishna. Still, I love my museum, but actually, the whole house is dedicated to Krishna. And see,
just above this antique table, which is 327 years old. See, there's an inscription at the bottom of the table. So just, there's a picture of Krishna. So actually we have this as an offering for Krishna. Well, maybe we were a little attached to the inscription on our table and so on, and to the prestige that we get from it, you know what I'm saying? Maybe it made us look really rich and important, and maybe we were a little bit into that, but now we've put Krishna there. So we still look rich and important, but we put it on the table for Krishna. So we see here the mixed motives. But eventually, we care more and more about Krishna, and no more about table. One day, this table, that table. Anyway, this antique thing, you know, actually, to tell you the truth, you know, it may be hundreds of years old, but actually, the thing got sharp points, and every time you walk past the thing, you hit it, right, sometimes, and God, it hurts, you know. And I actually realized that to improve my life, that table has to go. Eventually, you become sober. You become sober. In the beginning, you're a little bit intoxicated. Oh, antique table, antique, 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 prestige, prestige, from table, table, table. Until you realize it's actually a wobbly thing, you know what I'm saying? You're thinking about it, you know. That table's in the wrong place. Out with the thing, out. Huh? Like this, when we bring Krishna in our life, we gradually become sober. And then we can see things in perspective and decide, you know, what to use, what not to use in Krishna's service. So, in the beginning there's all this intoxication that is connected to all these things, like the benefits we get from them. Yes.
Sorry. Your comment, we pay for everything in life, is very real, I agree. Now, sometimes things are paid for us by other people's life, and sometimes we pay our life for certain things. And where does sacrifice come in? I'm new here, so.
No. That's very deep. That's not for someone who's new. You can't be that new when you ask a question like that. Sacrifice is, yes, we take a piece of our life and we give it. We just give it for Krishna's sake. And not only just, yes, we adjust our life to Krishna, and then to Krishna's devotee. And for that devotee, yes, we do. And give so many years of our life and just do that. You know, I mean, we never wanted to be that. You know, like Prabhupada he was relying on people. You know, Prabhupada had an enormous agenda, incredible agenda. He wanted to change the world. And he was not just someone who would say it, he was trying to do it. And therefore, he just made people responsible. And he relied upon them, you know, he gave them that work. And he was asking for sacrifice in that. He was asking for very difficult things, and people did. Some did, some didn't, some did better. So, whatever they did, you know, whatever small thing they did, they got benefit. If they did a big thing, they got more benefit. So this is how it works. That makes the difference. It's there where it becomes like really, where you get on the cutting edge. When you're ready to make the sacrifice. Before that, you know, we are going towards Krishna, we are going deeper in spiritual life, but we're still very much weighing, you know what I mean? Well, what's the price I have to pay? How much of my life do I have to pay for this? It's like, I don't know if I can do it or if I want to, that I'm not sure. But those who just selflessly dedicate and sacrifice for Krishna, they come out as the ones who get the mercy in me, who become empowered, who become spiritually deep. They get the realization. So sacrifice is the key. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.